You're listening to Big Cast, your source for financial technology innovation.
Welcome back to another episode of the Big Cast. My name is Glenn Sarvati on behalf of Best Innovation Group, where, as you hopefully know by now, we like to do cool things with technology for banks, credit unions, fintech firms, and people who are interested in the space around payments, financial services, cryptocurrency, and all that kind of good stuff. You'll find new content here every Tuesday on the Big Cast. You can find the company's website and more information and links to all of our podcasts at big-fintech.com. You can track me down, Glenn Sarvati, at 154advisors on Twitter. Always enjoy hearing from listeners. So please send us your thoughts. Very much looking forward to this episode. This is always one of my favorites, and based on our listener numbers, tends to be one of the more popular ones as well. Just returned from London, where I was spending time at Finovate Europe, which is a great opportunity to kind of put a finger on the pulse of what's going on with regard to new technological solutions in the financial services space, and gathered a series of interviews with the ones that I thought were the most intriguing. So we'll be spending most of the episode going over that. But having returned from London, I will first just touch on a couple of brand new hot topics in the space. The big breaking news as I'm recording this that just broke yesterday is around Apple and Goldman Sachs' announcement that they intend to launch a joint credit card aimed at the mass consumer market. Presumably, I don't know that it's actually said this, but I think it's safe to assume Goldman's doing this through its Marcus brand, which is their foray into mass market banking and has already had awfully good success in terms of attracting deposits. Apple obviously looking for new sources of fee revenue and using this as hopefully a trigger in their mind to drive some more utilization and adoption of the Apple Pay ecosystem. They're looking at tying functionality directly from the card into the app to allow for more financial controls and ability for people to do their budgeting. So exactly what that winds up looking like will be very interesting. So it's clearly a win-win opportunity for these two companies to scratch itches that they both have. Apple clearly looking to diversify revenue to the fee side as the sales of new phones has been slowing over the course of the last several quarters. The announcement in terms of what this will look like, and I believe they're talking about an April or May launch date for the card itself. Definitely something to be watching out for. People have been looking for Apple's entry into financial services for some time. As many have speculated, they're not going it alone. They're partnering. An interesting partner that they've chosen, somebody who's not traditionally thought of as a retail bank, but somebody who has, as I said, a very strong motivation to go after the space themselves. So plenty more to come on that. Definitely something to be watching quite closely. Also came back and heard the episode that John recorded solo here on the Big Cast last week about a couple of hot topics. Brexit, as well as the breaking news as he was recording, the JPM coin for JP Morgan doing their own version of a quote-unquote cryptocurrency. And John was recording when this was very new news. I'm not sure if he had access to all this information, but just wanted to offer a little bit of an update to that. One of the things I thought he pointed out that I think is an interesting take, and I would tend to agree. I don't think that this announcement would have gotten nearly as much attention if it hadn't been for Chase CEO Jamie Dimon's rather inflammatory comments in the past about Bitcoin being an entire fraud and basically kind of putting cryptocurrencies entirely into a category of speculative investments. He went as far as to say if he found out that anybody in his company were working on it, he would fire them because A, it's illegal, and B, it's stupid. So here they are, not too long later, actually launching something that looks a fair amount like what, to the naked eye, I should say, looks a lot like what he was railing against not that long ago. So I guess the question becomes, you know, as John speculated, and I think it's a really interesting way of thinking about it, was that just an attempt to throw everybody off the trail and buy them some time to really dive into the space while everybody was thinking that they were fully opposed to it? That's entirely possible. I'll also throw out something else. I don't think that what JPM Coin is currently positioned to do is entirely inconsistent with the comments that Jamie Dimon had made about cryptocurrencies in the past. And a couple of keys to that, and John did mention this last week on the show as well, they are following what has been come to be known as a stablecoin approach. Where the individual value of the JP Morgan coins, the JPM coins, will be pegged to precisely $1. the value of the currency will not float. Therefore, the whole notion of speculative assets and speculation in buying and investing in the product is totally eradicated. So that's not part of the model. And it seems to be the biggest thing that Jamie Dimon was railing against in his earlier comments. So that's one significant difference. Based on what they're saying as well, this is going to be used only for institutional transfers of money. The main idea here seems to be the instantaneous transfer of funds between accounts. As I read between the lines, it doesn't say this literally, at least in the early stages, both the sender and the receiver of funds have to be doing it in JP Morgan accounts too. So that's another specific piece. Institutional accounts, again, a very specific case that they're looking at doing in the back office for large dollar value transactions. One thing that I wonder about is Chase is part of the Clearinghouse's consortium that's working with real-time payments, RTP. So if the goal here was instantaneous payments, it's not immediately clear to me exactly how this is different and wouldn't be directly in competition with the RTP solution that Chase has been part of as well. But having said all that, my basic point is this is A, very early. They're announcing it. If you actually, I'll post a link. They have a pretty thorough kind of FAQ that they've put out at the Chase website about this. And they talk about it in terms of this being still a prototype. And at least in the early stages, very limited in terms of the use cases they're looking for. And when I say early stages, I think that's clearly going to run through 2020, if I think about it. Having said that, if these early stage tests go well, the foundation, there's no reason it couldn't be extended to work across banks, deeper into, at minimum business accounts and arguably even consumer accounts. They're not saying that that's the plan right now. Another one of these where it's really a matter of watching this space. Anyway, on to the main event, Finovate Europe, actually being held in London. A four-day event. The marquee portion of the agenda, though, as always has been the case with Finovate, are there 2 days of demos. Over the course of 2 days, 64 different companies got on stage and displayed their most recent ideas in seven-minute bursts. So it's very quick acting. The keys to this are no slides are allowed and no videos are allowed. It has to be a demonstration of a working product. So it's a bit of a high wire act. It kind of gets away from some of the smoke and mirrors. Obviously, people can still take a stronger marketing approach depending on how they spin that. But you pretty much have to walk the talk to a great extent. What I've always done with this is I've tried to come in with as few preconceived notions as possible. I don't schedule interviews in advance. I wait to see what appeals to me on stage. And then I track those folks down and do some interviews with them. And that's exactly what we did. And you'll be hearing a few of those today. And then we had enough content that this will be a two-part episode, and we'll follow up with more of that in next week's episode as well. An overarching theme, not surprisingly, given that this was taking place in Europe, open banking was, I would say, the single most common theme to these solutions. Obviously, open banking has been in place now in the UK and Europe for about a year. So many of these solutions have been driven around trying to leverage and harness the capabilities and the newfound requirements to comply and also the opportunities that puts forward for new challenger banks. I interviewed a couple companies along the lines working in open banking, and I'm going to save those for part two. I think that's kind of a thematic cluster that we'll get back to on the open banking side in part two next week. So for those of you interested in open banking in particular, stay tuned for that. It's interesting to me that after those solutions, I would say there was a much greater level of diversity in terms of the types of products that were being displayed. I typically try to go in and I usually have in my mind 5, 6, 7 buckets of general categories of solutions I expect I might be seeing. And over the course of the show, I'll put tick marks down to see how many of the different solutions really fall into those categories. This time around, 5, 6, 7 buckets didn't do the trick. By the end of the first day, I think I was already up to 12 buckets. I think by the end of the show, I had 15 or 16. I think that's actually a healthy sign that people are kind of coming at this space with a lot of different approaches. And I've got an interview with the VP of marketing from Finovate, Greg Palmer, who's the man on stage who plays MC across those 2 days. And we talk about that a bit too, coming up a little bit later in this episode. The other categories I would say that kind of rose to the top of the deck, not surprisingly, again, identity management has been a hot topic for some time. And then customer communication, which I'll get back to as well, which I see as kind of the natural evolution of what we've been talking a lot about these days as far as robo-advice. At the end of the show, the audience votes on the best of show winners from each day, the 32 presentations each day. Each audience member gets to vote for their favorite three. They then award the ones who receive the most votes. Not a set number of awards. They just kind of see what number of these solutions actually kind of rise to the top. And this time they named 8 best of show winners. And my hit rate was about the same as always. I found about half of those to be the ones that to me were worthy of my own votes. And as luck would have it, or I guess, or as just the things that really appeal to me, as I said, we have interviews with 2 of those coming up right now. The 2 of the winners are the ones I'll be playing right here. And the first of those is a company from Switzerland called Creologics. They are a 3-time winner at this point now at Finovate Best of Show, presented multiple times. And this one in particular, I would say probably was the single biggest standout in terms of really grabbing my attention, in part perhaps because, as you'll hear in the interview, their approach to what they bring to the table at Finovate is a little bit different than the way that some of their other presenters think about it. They take a bit more of a prototype standpoint and try to get a feel for what really resonates in the marketplace. So with no further ado, my interview with the 2 presenters from Creologics. Glenn Sarvati here at Finovate London with Joe Howes and Esther Vosch from Creologics, who did probably my single most wow presentation so far. It sounds funny for somebody doing an audio podcast. I'm not sure that we can do it justice without seeing the visual representation, because the whole idea, as I wrote down, the visual representation, a visual PFM with the ability to run simulations. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's what you were really presenting, mm-hmm. which I thought was a great way for people to play what-if analysis and things along those lines.
Absolutely.
You take kind of a different approach to Finovate than a lot of the other companies. Your back end is capable of delivering all this information, but what you're bringing to the table here are kind of the latest ideas you've got for the way a front end might mm-hmm. put it to the market.
So the functionality delivers a really broad feature set. But the front end, the user experience, needs to change all the time. So what we're doing with Finovate is prototyping. And also, these are working prototypes. So, you know, if someone actually, a bank does decide they want this, it's there. You know, we can deliver it.
Well, let's see if we can try to craft a picture. The scenario that you painted today was the front end knows how much money was being earned. So you mm-hmm. knew the income, the inflows. Mm-hmm. You knew the monthly spend. And then you started layering on that, what if I were to take on a mortgage?
Yeah.
What if I were to buy a car? At what point? What kind of car could I afford? And you then start modeling that out over time?
Yeah. So it comes with templates that are based on different financial situations, so that you've got a starting point already in the system. It knows what your income is. It knows what your outgoings are.
And again, because you've got that data already existing.
That data is available on you if you allow access to that data for your bank. So we just visually show it.
Now, you are a publicly listed Swiss-based company.
That's
also
correct.
Also have operations here in the UK.
Yes, we do.
I believe I heard you have some clients in Canada, or at least a client in
Canada.
Yeah,
we have.
Nothing in the US yet.
No, North America for us has not been a priority because we're predominantly European-based. Mm-hmm. So the Swiss business is extended by working with in Germany and in Austria. We have offices now in Asia, in fact, in Singapore. So we're now extending into the Asian region.
How many
next.
Banks are you working with?
Overall, 560 banks worldwide. So a sizable number.
And do those tend, with that number, I'm assuming that many of them are traditional banks as well as some of the newer challengers?
Indeed. No, absolutely. And also within the UK markets, we're working with private banks and wealth management companies, as we are in Switzerland as well. So it's a broad range of financial services.
You mentioned some of the challenger banks, maybe the ones more inclined to pick up on, as you said very simply, mm-hmm. Esther, that you can quickly change the look and feel, the interface, you know, the color schemes and things
like
that.
So challenger banks are interesting because their approach has tended to be, they don't have the legacy systems that they're worried about, so they build their own systems. That's exactly what the retail banks did 7 or 8 years ago. They're in danger, actually, of becoming big development houses and spending all their time just fixing problems and issues, you know? So what we offer is the ability to liberate that data, whatever form it's in. So whether it's a great big behemoth bank with 20-year-old legacy systems, or whether it's a challenger bank with a little database, you know, we can just plug into that with our platform. So we can also deliver the user experience regardless.
One of the current recurring themes I'm hearing there here is, you know, open banking is great in terms of access to data, but until you can actually turn that data into usable form,
correct,
there's still a limitation.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, great. So if people want to know more, Creologics, yes, best way to get in touch via the website?
Via the website, which is creologics.com.
Great. Joe Howes, Astrid Voss, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Thanks again to Joe and Esther for taking the time to talk about the Creologics solution, and best wishes to Esther on her marriage, which I'm assuming has already taken place. Her wedding's probably happened by the time this is airing, and she's having a chance to listen to that. So congratulations. As I believe I mentioned in the interview, Creologics has won in the past. This is their third victory at Best of Show, as I understand it. They also, as Greg will mention, I believe set a brand new record of accidentally dropping and breaking their trophy within a minute of when they actually accepted the Best of Show award at the reception after day two of the event. As we discussed, I've always been impressed by what they've brought to the table. I have not voted for their solutions in the past because they seem to be so far out in the future that I didn't think they were necessarily something that would resonate in the marketplace today. I think this is definitely one that, to me, grabbed my attention and struck me as much more commercially viable in the here and now, which is why I thought Creologics was an absolute standout in this show here in 2019. On to our next Best of Show winner that we talked to, Jordan Christopher of a company called Glia, who actually has made an impression on me before under a different name. They have rebranded themselves. The company was previously called SaleMove. They are based in New York City, and their focus is on customer communications. And one of the things that I've noticed as we've gone through this is that I think what we used to call robo-advice has kind of moved a little bit more into where just a more straightforward approach of customer communications. Again, one of my favorites of the bunch. Let's listen to hear what Jordan has to say.
Glenn Servati here at Finovate London with Jordan Christopher, the SVP and head of sales for Glia, who I have seen before at these events under the name SaleMove. You've rebranded the company recently.
We did. Hey, Glenn. Great to speak with you.
And you mentioned Glia's got an interesting... I asked you before what the story was, and I was not familiar with the word.
It's incredible how much thought goes into a brand change, but we set out to adjust the brand. Because we found after a couple of years as SaleMove, our customers were using us for much more than helping them sell their products. They were using us to really support customers in general, customer service, customer experience. And tying the name Sale to those experiences was a little off course. So we went down the road of trying to figure out, you know, what will work, what will tell a better story about who we are and the value that we deliver to organizations. And one of our co-founders came across the name Glia, which is actually Greek for glue. And the glia cells in our brain are the cells that are responsible for communication throughout our body. So we thought there was nice alignment with the platform that we provide and that story.
And it's also a great example of a pivot, too. I mean, you put a product in the marketplace, you discover a need that actually isn't exactly what you originally intended, but, you know, run with it. So
yeah, that's product wonderful. Did not change. You know, no acquisition, no story there, just a complete rebrand to align with how our customers are actually using the platform.
And one of the things that really caught me about your presentation yesterday is, you know, the last few Finovates, I've been seeing tons and tons of robo-advisor, AI type stuff. Haven't seen that as directly this time, but I think you've really kind of hit on why that's the case. You pointed out that chat at this point is basically table stakes, and you've really taken it to the next level.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to see the last couple of Finovates and how the messaging around AI and chatbots has changed. I think now that companies have released their first round of chatbots, they're running into a number of challenges with those chatbots failing and trying to figure out how to preserve the customer experience while that's happening. So during our Finovate demo, we wanted to show how the platform could start out with an AI-powered chatbot, which you can do with our platform, but if it fails or if it senses it's going to fail, being able to seamlessly transfer that to a live agent. And in terms of how that engagement started, it started with basic chat, but as that conversation got complicated and a bit lengthy, it was helpful for the customer service rep to upgrade that chat to voice.
And so, I like the idea that it's not the consumer kind of finally getting frustrated and hitting a button. They very well may just opt out entirely. You are the ones that proactively, or your clients are the ones that then upgrade, as you say, from the chat experience to the live experience, and sometimes even from the audio experience directly to a video experience.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it's, the nice thing is, as consumers, we have that perspective of what works and doesn't work. And, you know, generally, if you're in a chat for more than 5 minutes, probably 7 minutes max, it starts to become a negative customer experience. And at the heart of who we are, we really think of ourselves as a customer experience company.
And you're punching both tickets. Obviously, you're creating efficiencies because you're offloading the basic rudimentary queries and then making sure that the ones that get beyond that don't wind up becoming lost sales and customer dissatisfiers.
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's pretty incredible to see our customers' sales conversion rates, you know, double, quadruple from before they had the platform in to seeing the results and measuring the results after the platform's been in and you're seeing the application throughput increase that much. It's really remarkable to see how our customers are leveraging the platform.
Now, we're here in London, but I know the base of your operations, is it New York?
Or it is,
You are based in New York. Your base primary customer base is in the U.S. I believe Cap One, Deutsche Bank, I think you mentioned as well.
Yes.
A couple insurance companies.
Yes.
And it's usually, is it call centers or where is the typical implementation? If you can give people a better sense of how you're deployed.
Yeah, it's interesting. So about half of our customers are using us for sales pull through.
Okay.
So that's typically working with the digital team or the e-commerce team for typically financial services and insurance firms. The other half of our customers are using us for customer support, customer service. So that can oftentimes be built out of a centralized contact center.
Mm-hmm.
So our platform would be embedded into the infrastructure that they already have there. And we would sit there as sort of the system of engagement sitting next to their system of record or their CRM. On the sales side of the business, sometimes we're sitting at the business level with the lending department or loan officers or mortgage officers are using our platform to service their customers as well.
So again, from a banking setting, it could really go either way.
That's
right.
You've
really got both pieces of that.
Yeah, that's right.
And you're here in London because you're expanding in this area, or what is the logic of being here?
We have relocated some of our team here, and our engineering team has always been out of Estonia in Northern Europe. So we're starting to get some good traction in the United States, and it seems like a likely place to look for further expansion this year. You know, there's a huge market here, obviously, with banks and insurance companies that we think we can help serve.
What about from a sweet spot standpoint, if you're looking at smaller banks, credit unions, I mean, how far, you know, into the further tiers beyond the top 100 or so, can you really make a reasonable push?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see banks of all sizes, from community banks to regional banks to credit unions and certainly the large enterprise, everybody's trying to become more digital as customers are demanding that. So some of our larger banking customers have actually recommend that we tap into the credit union space. So we have a few credit union accounts that are leveraging our platform just as the enterprise is.
You do that directly or through VARs? Or?
Yeah, directly through the credit unions.
Oh, okay,
yep.
Wow.
Yep. And the nice thing about working with them is they can make decisions faster and they add a little bit of velocity to our sales pipeline. But it's been remarkable to work with them. We're starting to attend some of the credit union conferences to start to learn that community and how important their members are, you know, to them as institutions. So it's great to see us helping them as well.
So the opposite question of typical scaling, because you started with larger institutions, your fixed costs are not so great that it precludes people bringing it into a smaller shop.
That's a very good point. Yeah. The price point is very manageable, particularly when you look at leveraging our system as a consolidation play against bringing in multiple disparate sources or solutions and the cost and time to integrate those and bring those in.
The one thing we haven't touched on, which is one of the things really caught my ear when you were presenting, is no plugins, no downloads. I know as a consumer myself, I know that I always get a little bit leery. It's just an added hassle you don't want to deal with if someone says, okay, I need to see your screen. Let me send you this. Please download this little widget or whatever. Not necessary.
Yeah, our product team has just done an amazing job making the platform easy to use for both the service agents and sales agents that are using it at our customers' location, and then also for their customers that they're servicing. It's got to be seamless. It's got to be easy. Once you're forced to do some sort of a download or install again, it breaks the customer experience.
Yep. Yeah. So if people want to learn more, best way to get in touch, Glia, G-L-I-A.
.com.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where we are.
Wonderful. Jordan Christopher, SVP of Sales for Glia. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Glenn.
again, this is the fifth award for Glia. The other four were under the name Sail Move, and it just suddenly occurs to me that this is airing 2 days after the Academy Awards, and I sound a little bit like the guy who always does the voiceovers as the person's walking to the stage. This is the fifth award for so-and-so, who has previously been nominated X times. Well, I guess by being on stage, one of the 64 presenters, you're already nominated, but this is the fifth award for Glia, combined with their entries under the name Sail Move. So let's just do a quick recap of the other Best of Show winners, one of whom we've spoken to on this show before, and another one that, again, got my vote. A company called Launchfire from Ottawa, Canada. Romeo Maioni has been on the show before. They are focused on training tools that can be used for customers, but they've been focused more so in the actual call center or compliance areas of banks in terms of this product. They really go at it through gamification. The product that they were demoing this time is called Lemonade, which, of course, I will make a Beyonce reference to because I can never avoid the cheap musical reference. We'll find a link to last year's interview we did with him when we tracked him down. I know he was on stage in New York at Finovate, but I believe we spoke to him at one of the other banking conferences that he was presenting at, Romeo was presenting at as well. Another standout, and this time they broke through and picked up a Best of Show. Congratulations to Romeo and Launchfire. Another one that I really liked, and probably the single best really quick elevator pitch of the entire show, a company called Dorsum. And what they were doing is a mass market investing solution. And the way that they portrayed that is that they're bringing the Spotify approach to mass investing. So both scratching the itch of a nice tech, successful tech solution, and one that's really caught the attention of the, you know, a very attractive demographic. I thought that was a great way of putting it. And if that intrigues you, it intrigued me, and it's probably worth checking them out. And I'll post a link to the website of Finovate too, where all those, the demos, the 7-minute demos will all be, I believe, posted by them. They do post the 7-minute videos at their site. It does take a while for them to go up, but I suspect by the time that this episode is live, they will be out there. Another one I really like, which took home Best of Show, was PayKey. They are doing what they've referred to as social banking. What they've got is a solution that moves a pay icon directly into the keyboard of an app, a social networking app, regardless of which social networking app you're using, which then allows the bank or the payment solution provider to actually engage more directly where you're going to find many of your consumers in their social applications. Another one I thought was interesting. And then another example, again, kind of the theme that I was seeing, again, if I think about the way we move toward the marketplace, robo-advisory has been one of the biggest categories over the course of the last several shows. I didn't see too many people pitching themselves as robo per se this time around. What I did see was some very strong kind of familiarity of some of those robo type capabilities that were really just being couched in the standard form of customer communication. And again, that may be because, you know, do people really want to talk to robots? Is the point that it's a robot? No, the point at the end of the day is you're communicating with your customers. And one of the companies that focused on that is called Voca AI, Voca.ai. And I think they were probably the best evidence of that kind of an evolution directly into customer communications. Another one I liked, iProve, also won a Best of Show award. They're in the security identity management space. Again, as I say, one of the big highlights that you find a lot at the show. And again, one of the key kind of takeaway blurbs that I thought really stood out from the show. Their focus on identity is around your palm print, as opposed to facial recognition, which has been the way people have been doing it for the most part. And their point that I think is very well taken. Unlike faces, palms are rarely revealed in social media. So unless you start seeing somebody put their palm print up there as their image on the top of their profile, iProve may have a pretty good idea there. And then finally, the eighth Best of Show winner, a company out of Budapest, Hungary, who is also a repeat winner. They are called, I believe they pronounce her name, WUP, W.U.P. They were demoing a product called Sales Up. They are real marketers. They do a really good job on stage of doing a compelling presentation, usually in kind of a scripted skit format. The solution that they were, it was AI oriented, and it was using AI to power digital sales. Got a ton of attention, interesting stuff, very gimmicky and catchy. And I don't mean gimmicky in a bad way. They did not have my vote, but I certainly don't begrudge them their award by any stretch of the imagination. They stood out not only for the solution, but also for the presentation and their skills in communication up there on stage. And to me, again, that's one of the beauties, is what is defined as best of show is left totally open to the audience. It doesn't say, you know, most likely to succeed in the marketplace, most entertaining, you know, most technically proficient. And it's just whatever you think is best of show, it's your choice. And I think that's part of the beauty, is you can decide for yourself what that means to you. And with that in mind, Greg Palmer, the VP of marketing and the longtime host on stage, who has got a pretty thankless task to go out there for 2 days straight. And, you know, as we ping pong from one side of the stage to the other and just have a rapid fire succession of 7-minute demos, kind of keeping things flowing smoothly. So he's got a real unique perspective. He's also obviously involved in preparing these folks for the stage and picking the folks who actually do make it up to the stage. And I love having a chance to catch up with him and get his impressions, which is what I did after we finished up with the 2 days of demos. So here's my chat with Greg about our impressions of the show.
Glenn Sarvati here at Finovate with Greg Palmer, who's the man who takes the mic and handles master of ceremony duties. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh yeah, my pleasure.
Well, 64 companies, and I thought it went really, really well. I'm curious what you saw as any kind of unifying theme. I saw that Forrester Research, even after just day one, put out something where the headline they came up with was kind of a return to pragmatism mm-hmm. in terms of kind of what they were seeing in some of these solutions. That kind of follow what you were thinking?
It does. You know, we've sort of seen this trend unfold, and this is very typical for at least our viewpoint of how fintech evolution goes. You kind of have these periods where you get a new piece of technology that people don't really know how to use yet. Then people start to figure out how to use it. In this case, you know, blockchain, artificial intelligence are two that have obviously been top of mind for a while. And now you've got people kind of taking to that next level who are saying, we can turn this technology and point it towards something useful, which is, I think, a really important piece of the evolution of that technology.
What about, you know, as an American over here in the UK, obviously this being a show in London, yeah, what do you think we're seeing differently there as compared to what we might see in a US show?
Well, so certainly that kind of trend I was talking about, that using that technology, pointing it, is sort of a global trend. Specifically in the UK, though, there are a couple of interesting things, and we've kind of heard some of that already on this day today, talking about the way that the government regulation interacts with the innovators here, I think is something that's really unique. It's something that's very different from how things operate in the United States, where you've got kind of clear directives from the government in terms of, you know, open banking is a prime example, where the regulators have come in and said, this is the rule, we're going to help people follow it. And then you've got, on the other side, you've got the sandbox environment, which allows innovators to come in and work directly with the regulators to build things that they know are going to be compliant, which is something that I think is really appreciated on the part of innovators and banks, because you get this open line of communication, you get the ability to try some things out in kind of a safe space, which you know will then turn into something that's compliant. So I think that, you know, communication is really key. It's something that we always have heard that we want more of between regulators and innovators, because a lot of times innovators feel like they don't necessarily know what's going to happen. And the more communication we have there, the easier it is for regulators to build things with confidence, because they know that they're going to be legal, that they're going to have that possibility to turn into something big.
I know Dave Birch, who's doing the kind of the hosting today in today's session, started off the day saying that's one of the reasons London, I think, has built itself as a fintech hub, is you kind of have that regulatory construct, kind of a good solid foundation behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something we're starting to see replicated in other parts of the world as well. You know, I was just interviewing Nicole from Barclays, who was talking about some of the other initiatives about that sandbox to in other regions. And I think you're going to start to see people imitate that. It's not a perfect system by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, the more that open line of communication is there, the easier it is. And you do see the way that that impacts the area right around here, because there are people who are able to come to a city like London and continue to innovate because they got that opportunity to engage with the regulators.
Speaking of innovation, one of the best of show winners, actually we spoke to them as well on this episode, Creologic. So I guess they've won at least 3 times now. They're a repeat winner of best of show. And one of the reasons I think they really take a slightly different approach, they are providing, you know, an inside view of their latest prototypes that draw upon, you know, their core engine. It's really a new front end in a way of displaying things. So if somebody bites on it, they immediately can go to market with it, but it's not necessarily something they have in production today. And they were saying that that seems to be, you know, a model that used to be a little more common on the Finovate stage. Is that something you've seen before?
Well, first off, let me just say that Creologics also set a new record yesterday by being the fastest company to break their best of show trophy that we've ever seen.
They shattered
it within 30 seconds of receiving the trophy. So Esther, if you're listening to this, job well done there. You have a special place in Finovate history.
I thought that was a wine glass. That was actually
the trophy that they shattered there. So it's a fair point, though. And I think, you know, this is something that a lot of companies have done at Finovate before. And it's something that not a lot of companies are in a position to do, because there's a huge amount that you have to build out on the back end to be able to do that kind of demo, offer that versatility, offer that flexibility up there on stage. And so Creologics is a company that's in a unique position to be able to do that because of the work they've put in on the back end. But the more we see companies bringing that kind of newer, you know, beta type technology or prototype technology, they typically do well at our shows because they kind of give the audience this idea, this is a sneak peek, this is something that you can't find anywhere else. Yeah. And that really is what Finovate is all about, giving people who come here the ability to see something that's brand new, in some cases not even available in other formats. So we love to see that, and I hope other companies follow that example.
I remember, I think it might have been 2 years ago, Creologics put something out there that was a virtual reality thing, where mm-hmm. people were literally wearing goggles on the stage, which I thought looked really cool. I thought, okay, this is not ready for the real world as far as, you know, consumer adoption. But I think it really did wow people. In fact, I think that one may have won as well.
So this is actually one of the trends that I wanted to talk about as well, because we, you know, you mentioned to me before we actually got on the air here talking about how difficult it has been to kind of categorize some of our demoing companies. And so I think we're at a really fun point of kind of the innovation cycle right now, where, you know, we've got people who've looked at these technologies who are starting to figure out what they can do with it. And on the flip side, you've got kind of a banking community that doesn't have any clear mandates. You will see people, obviously, a lot of work being done on identity verification, both in terms of facial scanning or document verification.
That was one of them here. Right. In Europe, open banking clearly took mm-hmm. the lead, but I mean, you don't see that as much in other regions.
Yeah, and so you get these a couple of places where you've got that kind of clear mandate, a problem to solve, a directive to innovate towards. But outside of that, you see a lot of creativity, just kind of seeing what sticks, seeing what you can do. And then, of course, once people get a sense of all those things that are possible, there will be kind of a market shift towards, well, okay, these are the ones that actually we want to go with that will start to solve some real problems. And obviously, that's where banks have a really big role to play in kind of communicating to the innovators, here's what we need, here's what we're trying to solve. So as 2019 unfolds, as we get some of these, you know, some of this uncertainty figured out, I think there's going to be a little bit more direction for the innovators, more targets for them to hit. But for me personally, I love this stage of the process because we're kind of focused on what is possible, what we can do. And that's where you see a lot of really creative solutions, really fun solutions. And ultimately, you know, those are the ones that kind of drive the insular community of the fintech industry, even though they might not all necessarily make it out in front of customers.
And so you've seen this cycle kind of play out a couple times. I mean, you're in year 10 now.
Right. Yes, I know. You're 10. And so, you know, it reminds me of kind of where we were with Finovate Europe in 2014, 2015, where we had people who were doing things like, you know, banking through Microsoft Connect, mm-hmm. Which ultimately didn't really go anywhere. People putting together branch walls where you could stand in front of it and wave your arms and it would move things on the screen. And it's really cool technology, but ultimately you haven't seen that get adopted. But I love to see people playing with it, or like we saw with the Google Glass, people playing with that. So, and the companies who play with those toys, who end up coming up with cool things to show just for the sake of them being cool, are frequently the ones who are in a good position once there's kind of that mandate, once you get that information back, to create something that's really valuable. So I think it's a part of the process that can be overlooked, and companies will come in and say, we're going to do X and we're just going to target this one thing. And you got to, I mean, you respect that, right? Yeah. Of course. But the companies who are able to approach it with that creativity, who are able to really think outside the box, are the ones who set themselves up to be in a very good position once some of those pain points become known.
That makes sense. At least three of the winners this time were repeat winners. You keep tally someplace?
Yes, we do.
You have a Hall of Fame. You've got, you know, a register, a database of who's, you know.
Yeah, there's the top of the pile is there's some stiff competition up there, and I don't remember off the top of my head exactly what the standings are, but I know that Money Desktop / MX, same company with the rebrand, is up at the top there. I know Dynamics is towards the top of the pile. eToro has won, I think, six at this point.
Their daily newsletter.
There are, yeah. And now it's the eToro banners, by the way, all around all the soccer stadiums, football stadiums around here, too.
The last time I was here, they were all over the banners in the subway.
Yeah, so they're making that transition outside of fintech marketing towards the general consumer, which is, of course, vital for any company. You have to make that leap to get user adoption.
It occurred to me that I was thinking, given that we live in this land, we're visiting the betting culture of the UK, where you've got storefront bet parlors, that I thought, at some point I'm going to start seeing, I wonder what the odds were for, some of the players here coming through.
So we do a little bit of informal guessing among our staff. And I will say, I made this joke from stage, and it's true. I'm actually really terrible at predicting who's going to win, which is slightly embarrassing, but I think it's also part of the fun of it. It's the surprise element, who's going to resonate with the audience. And of course, a lot of it comes down to who's going to really do well with their 7 minutes on stage. A good demo can go a long way there. But, I don't know who the bookie would be who could lay the odds on it, but I'll tell you right now, it's not going to be me. It'll have to be somebody at Ladbrokes who will come in. I'm sure those guys will figure out a system really quickly to get it exactly right.
Yeah, and I know, one of the pieces that I think makes it fun as well is you don't define best of show very specifically. Best presentation, most likely to succeed, coolest technology. If you wanted to, you could break it up into four or five different subcategories, but it's whatever it means to the individual.
Right. So. Whatever resonates with you, yeah. It's a complete audience choice. And again, just to reiterate for everybody, Finovate staff does not vote. Presenters don't vote. It is only the audience who picks. So it's whatever resonates with them that will end up defining who wins those trophies.
So what's next up for you? Back to the west coast of California. I know Silicon Valley, you're moving the venue. Is it May?
Come May, May 8th through 10th, we'll actually be heading back up into San Francisco, and it's always fun for me to get to do a show in my own home time zone, which is rare, yes. And so that'll be a really fun one. We're very excited to go back into downtown San Francisco.
You've been doing San Jose for quite a while now, right?
Yeah, we started out in San Fran, then we did San Jose for about 3 or 4 years, and now back up to San Fran again. So we'll be right on the heart of Union, right on Union Square in the heart of downtown. Which is going to be just a fantastic venue, and obviously so many amazing tech companies immediately around there, and the financial side of things as well. So that should be a really fun one for us. We've been getting people kind of asking us, when are you going to come back to SF? Well, this is the year. We're going to be doing it, and book your flights now, May 8th through 10th, finovatespring.com.
Great. If I don't see you there, I'll definitely see you in New York City in September.
That's right. Yeah, back in Manhattan, September 23rd through 25th, same venue as last time, the Marriott Marquis right on Times Square, which is a whole different animal, but again, another really fun venue, and Finovate Fall is kind of the show that started it all, so that's always a very popular one for us as well.
Well, again, Greg, thanks for taking the time. Always appreciate it, and I'll be seeing you on stage.
Yeah, my pleasure. Until we meet again, we'll do this again.
Thanks a lot. So with that, I think I've already taken up more of your valuable time than I intended to with this. Sorry about that. As usual, we'll have so much to talk about that we go a little bit longer than we intended. Thanks again to Greg Palmer for taking the time to talk. Congratulations to all the Best of Show winners. And don't forget, we've got more content coming up from Finovate Europe, specifically around the open banking space, which I do think was the single biggest theme, overriding topic that came through loud and clear at the show. So we've got three more interviews with presenters that were involved. And we'll get into those next time around. Just to give a little bit of a tease there, a company called AccountScore, Imburse, and 5Degrees. We'll have interviews with them next time around, as well as a broader conversation about the open banking space overall, which was the topic in an entire day of separate breakout tracks in a symposium at Finovate, which I had the honor of helping to moderate for portions, as well as the topic of Brexit. We'll get back into that as well. Please do tune in next week here at big-fintech.com. Track us down wherever you find your podcasts. Love to hear what you think. Please follow me and send me your thoughts on Twitter at 154advisors. Keep watching for the latest in the fintech space. We'll try to keep you as updated as possible. Have a great day, and hope to see you soon.
Got a question or want to join the conversation? We'd love to hear from you. Tweet us at Big Fintech, email us at info@big-fintech.com, or visit our show notes and comments at www.bigfintechmedia.com.